This is Richard Christie from Charred Walls of the Damned, and I give you the right to rock.
The right to rock.
Listening to the Right to Rock podcast, the only heavy metal and hard rock show on the net made by fans for fans. And now, get ready for two guys that are so metal, they pour motor oil on their cereal. It's Genghis and Ragman!
Voices Within the Walls. Yeah, it was. You know, Jason, he's a badass guitar player.
Yeah.
Dude, and came out of nowhere.
Where are all these people coming from, dude?
I don't know. But, you know, it's cool to hear a band, you know, like Charred Walls of the Damned. It's got, you know, Ripper Owens, Steve DiGiorgio, I think I probably just butchered his name, on bass. Been with a lot of dudes. You got Richard Christie. Played drums with Death, Control Denied, and Iced Earth. And now he's does comedy on the Howard Stern Show, but does Charred Walls of the Damned as well. So, and Jason is a producer. He's produced All That Remains, and there's a bunch of newer bands. And dude's got a resume. Let's just say that.
Nice.
So that was cool. A little Charred Walls for you, man. So I hope you guys dug that. Well, we're getting started here, man. We got all sorts of cool shit going on tonight. We got a little bit of some classic Anthrax going on for a video of the evening. We're watching Anthrax Alive 2, the DVD. This came out in 2005, man. And the reason we watch this, and I know everybody's probably heard by now, but if you've been living under a rock, they're sort of all the way back together with the classic lineup from Among the Living is Spreading the Disease. I guess Spitz is not with them. I'm not sure who's playing lead guitar for them now. We'll have to do some recon and find that out. That's find that out before the show ends tonight.
See what kind of shit they're trying to pull over.
Exactly, because someone's going to get hurt, you know, for keeping this kind of shit from us. But anyway, Joey Belladonna back in Anthrax. We're going to talk about that a little bit tonight. Before we get started, though, let's open a beer and let's play some Thrax, man. What do you want to hear, Genghis?
Dude, let's go for a little Antisocial. What do you think?
Antisocial. Let's do it. Isn't it?
I think it is.
Who did they remake that from, do you know?
The Jackson 5?
Jackson 5.
It was Pink, wasn't it? Dude, John, Pink wasn't even around. Could have been.
Fucking could have been.
Yeah, no shit.
Like, oh, okay.
It's an argument with this guy every time. I tell you what, let's open our beer of the show.
It's a cover, it's a Trust cover, isn't it?
Trust. Nice. A French band. And I tell you what. God, what the... before we open the beer, I think we should play a cool track from Trust. Or should we?
Oh, is that not...
You want to get crazy here?
Dude, it's up to you, dude.
I'm feeling crazy. If you're a big fan of the heavy metal soundtrack like I am, Trust was actually featured on there. And I believe they're a French band. All right, this is off the heavy metal soundtrack. This is Trust, and I'm in a music playing mood, so we're going to play you a little bit of Prefabricated by Trust. Let's get some beer rolling.
That was a little disappointing, I suppose.
And it was premature as well. It's all right. Okay, what do we got, Genghis? Well, let me start pouring here. I know there's a glass back there.
And I hope I don't mess this up. Now, I'm a little confused, ooh. I'll admit. Maybe someone can help me.
It smells better than the last Keller beer we had.
That's good. I know the moonshot.
Oh, wow.
And then the next part of it looks like Killer Brow, like Lowenbrow, you would say, except it's got the umlaut over the A, which is, I remember it means you pronounce it kind of like an EU, like oi, so you'd be like Killer Boy. And that doesn't make a lot of sense to me, so maybe I'm misremembering something. But it's called Moonshot Killer Brow, we'll just say it that way. And Supposed to be a pretty good beer. It's another one of those Keller beers, which, as we remember from the last show that featured one, means cellar. So they used to traditionally brew these suckers and keep them up in the cellar, or down in the cellar, rather, to finish off their...
But were they out of the cellar, Holmes?
I don't know, Holmes. That's a good question.
We should ask Bobby.
Let's see what you guys to say about it.
Well, I tell you, well, let's cheers to it. You know what? And this is interesting. Look at the consistency of this one compared to the one we had.
Right, because they're both supposed to be unfiltered beers. A lot of killer beers are unfiltered.
Yeah, this one is. And the other one was not. Cheers.
Cheers.
Different.
It's interesting.
It's kind of got...
Not an unpleasant smell, necessarily. Not a fragrant smell, like a pretty one, but it's not an unpleasant. Like that one beer that was so
nice. I don't get a lot of taste out of it, do you?
I do notice some taste, but it's nothing... It's almost like it's under-carbonated or something.
Yeah, yeah.
I did notice when you took that cork off there, it was a little... a little kind of flat. Yeah, it wasn't exactly a big thing. But, I don't know. I mean, it's not... I don't dislike it.
No,
I'm not getting anything out of it. It's got a real... It's kind of grainy. Like a real grainy aroma, you know? Almost like a... I don't know.
It's got a...
like it's... Maybe it's lost something. I don't know.
It's kind of got a sweet taste at the end.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? Do you taste that sweetness or no?
A little bit, but not much. I'm tasting more of the flatness of it.
And
I don't know
if
that's deliberate or not. It's supposed to have like a medium carbonation. But let's see. I mean, how is this going to affect, we wonder, the overall beer rating? Let's go down that list, shall we?
Sure.
First of all, we got drinkability. So that's a rough one for this guy. Maybe 2.5, I guess?
Maybe a 2.5. Again, it's not bad. It's just, I don't know. It's just kind of lackluster, maybe?
Certainly not blowing me away or anything with fantastic taste. There's some where we've opened them and just felt like, holy crap.
We've fallen in love with the beer.
Yeah, it's like amazing. So taste, I'm going to put that on maybe another 2.5.
Yeah, 2.5.
And finally...
drinkability.
We did drinkability and taste. Which
probably about a 2.5.
Right.
Alcohol. Let's see where we are on this guy. Let's see.
Some of these labels is really hard to find them. I believe it's 5.4%. Then.
Okay, so it's fairly
my
weak.
Understanding. So it's fairly weak, like you said. It's
we'll give it a flat 2.5, I guess. Is that too high?
No, I don't think it's too high.
Great, it's not bad. It's just, you know, I don't know if I'd pick it up again.
But I agree. But you know, we're gonna drink it. We're gonna finish it. That's what.
Yes, we will.
Without complaint, I'll tell you that much.
Well, tell you what. Let's get. We don't really have a specific topic per se right now, but there are some things going on in the metal world we'd like to talk about. One being Anthrax back together, and kind of analyze, you know, where they were before this, I guess.
And maybe if it helps here, maybe I'm like some in the audience. I myself personally know nothing about what was going on. I know that there was, you know, they were big in their time, of course. I was a big fan of Anthrax. I didn't know all their songs, but I knew their main ones, and I was thought they were pretty cool. I like Scott Ian. He's one of those cool kind of charismatic dudes. And then, of course, after that, the heyday of metal kind of dropped down for a while. You didn't hear from them. They put out albums just sporadically, I guess. But right around that time, I heard that's when they started having like band problems, right? Like they broke up and got back together a bunch of times in that time from now and back to then.
Frank left the band for a while, and he played with Therapy for a while.
Okay.
And I forget who filled in on bass. They had a couple guys, I believe. And John Bush took over for Joey, and that was in the early 90s. Mm-hmm. They did several records with John. And then I guess in 05 is pretty much when they, I guess, got the classic, quote-unquote, lineup back together. But before that, I guess 03 was the time that they put out their last record with John. And it was a killer fucking record. It was like Anthrax is back. It was We Come For You All.
Oh, okay.
And I think we've played some stuff from that record. I tell you what, we'll go ahead and play something now off that. Let's play Superhero. That was a cool track.
Cool,
let's check
that
out.
and that'll dignify your prayers. What remains when your seed you becomes human? Hear the legend, something sacred you can't understand. Becomes bigger than the man.
It's a totally different animal, though, with John in the band. Mm. When you got Joey in the band, it's, you know, totally, the style's a lot different. Mm. But the music on We Come For Y'all was such, it was such a great record. You know, it was Anthrax, but it was a different Anthrax. It was a different animal, I think, with John in the band.
I think so, yeah. So apparently the John Bush era was like 92 to 2004.
Yeah, pretty much.
And the Joey Belladonna era, which is my understanding, I mean, he was the guy for all their really big stuff. I mean, when they really got big, it was Joey doing the singing, right?
Yeah.
He like Indians and
well,
and
they had
Social.
The one record with Neil Turbin, Fistful of Metal. That came out in the early 80s.
Yeah, 82 to 84.
And then when he left, they got Joey. They did the EP Armed and Dangerous. Uh-huh. And then right after that was Spread the Disease. And okay. It just took, the band started taking off as soon as Joey joined the band.
Right.
And then they went
so
all the way.
So to a lot of people, he's the voice of Anthrax.
Exactly. So I don't know what happened when Joey left the very first time, but they ended up getting John Bush from Armored Saint fame.
Uh-huh.
And John was with them, what you said, almost 10 years,
voice, I mean, obviously they're going to have different qualities, but he basically, I mean, it's not like a radical shift in the sound, right? I mean, when he sang a song, as opposed to a song that Joey had sung back in the day, when he sings one of those songs, can you really just go, holy shit, it's like a totally different song? Or does isn't his voice kind of similar enough to...
No, not really.
So he's not the same kind of singer.
He's a different type of vocalist.
Okay, cool.
And, you know, I never saw him with John fronting the band. I think the last time I saw him was probably on the, what was the name of that record? The one with Antisocial.
City Euphoria?
Yeah, City Euphoria. That's the last time I saw him, I think. That was before Persistence of Time, right?
I think so, yeah. I think so, because that was, yeah. Time, ticking in my head.
Yeah, so.
I remember that one when that came out.
I didn't see.
That's probably the last time I remember listening to with Anthrax before. I didn't hear about him for a while and just kind of dropped off listening to him because, you know, other shit came along.
Right, of course. But, anyway, John leaves the band when they get back together here in, 2005.
Mm-hmm.
And that lasts, I guess the reunion lasts a couple years.
Mm-hmm. 2005, 2007.
And then I think it turned into a money thing or something like that. Joey's exits again. I think Dan Spitz leaves. And then, you know, and just to give you guys a little information on Dan Spitz,
mm-hmm.
Dan is in a new band. He's not making watches again, at least that we know of. He may be doing that on the side just to bring in some bread, but he's got a new band called Doo Monkey with himself, Peter Baltus from Accept, the bass player from Accept, Wade Black from Crimson Glory, and drummer Patrick Johansson from Yngwie Malmsteen.
Oh.
And I don't know, do you know who Wade Black is, Genghis?
Wade Black?
Yeah.
No, I can't say that I did.
He did some cool stuff. I think the best thing he did that I can remember is he sang on this one Crimson Glory record when they kind of came back called Astronomica. Uh-huh. And it came out, several years ago. But it's a very cool record. I tell you what, just to give you a taste of what Wade's all about, let's check this out. Let's try a track called Cydonia. I really dug that track. Check it out.
His voice.
was cool. You see how he's got that higher pitched voice.
Right.
I think what, you know, I've never looked at Dan as this badass guitar player. It'll be interesting to see him in a realm with a bunch of very good musicians and see, you know, how things work out. It could be interesting. I'm looking forward to hearing Doom Monkey.
Cool.
But back to, you know, Anthrax here. So, John, I guess after Joey leaves, they hire this young guy named Dan Nelson.
Mm-hmm.
They do some touring. They do a brand new record, studio material, the whole nine yards. And then for some reason, Dan is either fired or quits the band.
Mm-hmm.
Leaves them hanging right before the record's going to come out.
Wow.
So, in desperation, I guess due to some gigs or something that they had, they call up John Bush and say, "Yo, John, come on, we need some help here." So John gets involved, but in the meantime, John was working on the new Armored Saint record, La Raza.
Mm-hmm.
So John's kind of doing double duty. He's not really that motivated to do a lot of touring with either band. He's enjoying doing the studio work, I think, for each record. I'd love to talk to him if we get that opportunity someday.
Sure, sure.
But I think he says, you know what, if there's not going to be 10,000 people out there every night, I'm not going to do the clubs. I want to do big stuff. And if I'm not going to be in a band that's big enough to do that, then forget about it. I'll do something else.
Cool.
So, I think with John's lack of commitment, and also just to backtrack a little bit, he was supposed to go in and re-record the vocals that Dan Nelson did on this new material, but his heart wasn't into it because he didn't have an opportunity to write any of the material.
That makes sense, I
guess. Write his own lyrics. He wanted to put his own stamp on it.
Sure.
So I think, I'm guessing, I don't know Scott or any of the guys in Anthrax, but just from a fan perspective, I'm guessing those guys said, you know what? If Johnny, he's got to shit or get off the pot here. If he ain't going to take a shit, then we're going to have to find someone else. I think out of desperation, they called up Joey. He said, "Joey, come on, let's make this happen."
I wonder what they had to do then, because, I mean, he's in, apparently, for the tour as well as some doing a new album, right?
They're talking about doing a new record now.
Yeah, so that's interesting.
But, you know, with Joey...
Is there that much bad blood that we should have to wonder? I mean...
I think it was all financial. I think Joey wanted more money than anybody else in the band or
they were
something.
Just like, we're not willing
like,
to pay that.
Go fuck yourself, man. We've been doing this since you've been out of the band, keeping the name alive. And who are you? Yeah, you're going to bring back some of the old fans, but, you know... Whatever.
It kind of says something, too. It's like, you know, he's here, but he's here because he's getting paid. Mm-hmm. As opposed to, it's cool playing with my friends again that we were in this awesome band with.
But supposedly for some like
I mean,
that,
I'm not trying to dump on Belladonna. I mean, I'm not...
Yeah, we don't know.
I don't know what his motivations are.
This is all our interpretation of the situation.
Just on what we can see, yeah. Exactly.
Yeah. As fans, we're saying, he looks like a greedy son of a bitch.
I can see where some people would draw that conclusion.
Yeah.
Not knowing all the, you know, everybody's say... about the matter, but you know, what are you going to do? I mean, like that's why I keep saying, I realized eventually, you know, I was the young kid too, and I thought, yeah, fucking metal. But I eventually realized, okay, realistically, it's a business, like any other thing.
Totally.
I mean, you set your own hours pretty much. I mean, you know what I mean? It's a lot looser in its structure, you know, than like in a corporate office, but it's nonetheless a business. You know, we have contracts, we're all contractually obligated to be at this show tonight,
right.
You know, we're supposed to come out here, play this many minutes because we got to pay these, you know, 100 guys that are all here making this shit happen. I mean, we're businessmen, you know.
We're
putting
that's
on a
show.
That's
what it comes down to.
Yeah, you guys may be out there rocking and stoned and just drunk and just going, yeah, and, you know, going home to get laid after this, but, you know, we got a job. We're moving on. We happen to like our job, but, I mean, it's a job.
Sure.
So, it's unfortunate, though, that they can't, because a lot of people, like we were hearing about that thing about Aerosmith.
Mm-hmm.
You know, with
Joey Kramer.
Yeah, with Joey Kramer saying where they were walking along. He was walking along back right when Aerosmith was starting to get big, and it was starting to look like something was really taking off, and they were going to be really huge. And it just like this is, you know. And Joey's like, this is great, you know. That we're going to be fucking buddies, man. We're going to be playing in this band, and we're going to be rich, and it's going to be awesome. Joe Perry, apparently, according to Joey, turned to him and said, "Wait a minute, why do we have to be buddies to be in a band?"
Hey guys.
Yeah.
Joe can be like that. He's you know, what? You know, Joe and Joey, you know, they have a little strained relationship. And I can elaborate if you need to know some more.
No, we're good.
No, we're cool. We're cool, but thank you for offering up. your information.
Thank God it is.
Guys, any day.
Any day for what?
Any day.
All right. Whatever.
Thank God that's been established. But, no, I mean, I can understand how someone would feel like, wow, crap, you know? I mean, a lot of people go into the business because they enjoy what they're doing and they think of those people as their pals or whatever, right?
Right.
So I'm sure it's kind of disappointing to find out that one or more of them are like, fuck this, I just want my paycheck and I'm out of here.
Well, how fucked up is that? I mean, and look, you look at a man like Aerosmith. And they do, I mean, the guys have been doing it 40 years,
dude.
And Perry's going to look over at Joey Kramer and say, you know what, we don't got to be fucking friends.
They've been doing it almost as long as I've been alive.
Yeah, you go fuck yourself.
So that's crazy. Yeah. They formed like a year after I was born.
Wow.
So that's amazing, you know what I mean? And that's... Mm-hmm. That's only part of their lives, you know what I mean?
Right.
For me, it's my whole life. For them, it's like, yeah, that's one phase of my life. You know, I grew up before that. You know, I mean, I'm sure they were like 20 or something when they started the band.
Oh, easy. Yeah, they had to be early 20s, I would think.
Totally. So, I mean, that's amazing. But anyway, I can see how some people would say that about it. So anyway, Anthrax is now back together with that lineup with Joey Belladonna.
Yeah, I don't know who's who the other guitar player is. I guess we could try to find that out.
Otherwise, it's the original lineup. Or
yeah,
close to
it's what, Frankie, Charlie, Scott, and Joey,
nice.
And then whomever. I tell you what, let's go ahead and look up. I tell you what, while we're looking up to see who the new guitarist of Anthrax is, let's check out something off Spreading the Disease. Let's play a little bit of Medusa. Well, I tell you what, we are still in search mode. Actually, Genghis is typing away here, trying to figure out who is playing with Anthrax. But moving on, you know, as he's doing that, let's talk about another band that recently got back together. And this one's an interesting one because it's, I don't know, if you look at some bands that get back together, especially fairly iconic bands from the 80s, and they get back together... And it's a big reunion deal, and then they don't get the one of the original members.
Mm.
Be it, you know, if it was a drummer, or, and no knock to drummers or bass players, but if it was a bass player or a rhythm guitar player, a guy that wasn't just a major standout in the band, you could say, well, okay, I still want it to be the guys, but, you know, if the lead guitarist is there and the original vocalist is there, okay, you know, I'll check it out, no problem.
Right.
But there's a big reunion going on. They're getting lots of press, so I think they're getting some tours and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But they're going out without their original vocalist. That's except. Wolf Hoffman got the group back together, and we talked to Udo, I guess, a few months back, and mm-hmm. Udo said, hey, I don't know how long these guys are in it for. If they're going to go in it for the long haul, I might be in. But if not, I'm not going to sacrifice my solo band because I really dig my solo band. So they got the guy that used to sing for T.T. Quick. And he's singing for him now. Oh, I think Genghis is done here. Let's get our Anthrax question answered, and then we'll keep on rolling here.
The guitarist, it's a guy who's played with them before, actually, and actually been on some of their albums. Rob Caggiano.
Oh, okay. Rob's with him.
Who apparently is also a producer in his own right. Did you know he's produced some Cradle of Filth and stuff?
Yeah. He's a big producer.
Yeah. He goes under the name Scrap 60 or something like that.
Yeah.
And he's produced El Nino, Bleeding Through, I think was the name of the other bands. And
yeah, Bleeding
36
Through.
Crazy Fizz.
On the show. Yeah.
You know, so he's Dry Kill Logic. He's done a lot of the Agony Scene. He's done a lot of producing, and that's, you know, he's no slouch.
Well, that makes perfect sense because he was with them on We Come For You All. He's the guy that played guitar
right
in Dan's place.
Mm-hmm. And so, the Greater Two Evils compilation, the live album Music of Mass Destruction. And he played with them from 2001 to 2005, and he left when the Among the Living lineup reunited, apparently.
Yeah.
So he's not unknown to them. He's been with them for a while. He's a big dude on his own labels. So,
cool.
I mean, more power to him. I mean,
he's not a bad guitar player. He's not great. I mean, But did you ever think of Anthrax?
Yeah, it's not like I listen to Anthrax for the amazing solos. Not to put anybody down. I'm just saying I got them because their rhythms are just fucking great.
Oh, yeah. And
they wrote some
songs.
Really great kind of thrashy stuff. And
yeah,
I'm a
wrote
big
great
thrash
songs.
Yeah, I'm a big thrash fan. You know, that's all there is to it.
If you think about it, they were one of the first bands of real metal, heavy metal, to mix in a lot of, I know a bunch of people are like, rap! No, I'm not talking about that yet. Before that, they mixed in melody with thrash.
Mm-hmm.
And their songs you could sing along to. And Joey's voice was so melodic. It was what a great fit for a thrash band. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
I think it's cool that Joey's back. I hope that it's for the right reasons this time. I hope it's not, you know, hey, let's cash a paycheck here and do this. I think the guys may have hired him in desperation. I don't know. But I saw something, you know, it's fucking hoopla anyway, that they were all seen in this club and having beers and looked like they were having a good time with each other. So hopefully that's the case, and hopefully they'll keep it together this time. We'll see what happens, because it's really cool watching this video, you know, and seeing the band together and how no one's really aged. Like, Scott's lost his hair, but he's still got the goatee.
He makes it work.
Yeah,
I mean, he was cool with the hair, and then when he lost it, you thought, oh no, he lost it. What's that going to do? Because you're used to so many metal bands, especially from that era, long hair. And he just went, screw it, shaved the head, and grew the goat even longer, and just said, fuck it.
He dyed it, I guess, kind of like Daryl did.
He always does that kind of shit, yeah. Pretty amazing.
Well, cool. Well, getting back to Accept, the new vocalist is Mark Tornillo, or Tornillo, I'm not sure. It's something like that. New Yorker. Mm-hmm. But yeah, T.T. Quick, I guess they had two records in the 80s. And I don't know what Mark's been doing over the last few years. But you know what? I'm hearing positive things about this. I was listening to Andy Trunk's show on Sirius here not too long ago, and they played some new Accept. Mm-hmm. It wasn't bad. It wasn't great. But, you know, Wolf Hoffman's one of those guys that he's a guy that's interesting to me. He is touted to be this fucking awesome guitar player. And granted, the guy can play, and he's got chops, but he's never done anything to where I thought, wow, he's up there with Yngwie, Lynch, you know, all these great guitar players. You don't mention Wolf Hoffman with those guys, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
But I tell you what, not to take anything away from Wolf, he's wrote some great songs, he's played some great solos.
He's also apparently supposed to be a pretty badass photographer.
Oh, really? I didn't know that.
Mm-hmm. He's like a professional photographer.
You see the things you learn by listening to the Genghis and Ragman show?
Just saying, you know, we got to kind of get the 411 on people.
I know.
Hey. Drop some knowledge on you people. See
what Genghis.
Oh, no. I shudder every time he asks me something.
I just want to say, I did a pictorial with Wolf.
Really?
Thank God.
And it was all nude. That's all I'm saying. Okay. No, he took pictures of my jacks from my catalog.
Okay. Good for you. Good for you. Anyway, on that note, let's play a little bit of Dead On by Accept off the Death Row record. Death On. A lot of guys who say, what the fuck are you talking about? Classic? That was a classic, dude. It's old. I don't know how old, but I mean, it's an older record, and it was cool. I mean, it was different. I didn't want to play all the... Dude, it came out in 95.
Calm down.
Yeah. No, I didn't want to play your regular stuff like Metal Heart and Fast as a Shark.
The obvious stuff. I usually end up playing the obvious stuff myself for old stuff. I just can't.
I just want to pull something out of my ass.
Oh, you man. Pull a line out of there, don't you?
Go fuck yourself. Right? Go fuck yourself.
You're allowed to make jokes and I'm not.
Precisely.
He pretty much nailed it.
Exactly.
I bet I think it's actually in the contract.
No, she's fighting. He's constantly in violation of the contract.
Oh, yeah. What else is new?
So, we got Accept back together. Mm-hmm. We got Anthrax back together.
What's next,
and,
dude?
I don't know. We got Rat back together. You know, we talked to Bobby a few shows back.
Mm-hmm, that's right.
Rat's back together, almost the whole lineup, with the exception of Juan Crucier. Kind of interesting, some of the stuff that Bobby said about Juan. That
yeah.
It sounds like Juan was in that same mode as Joey was. It was turned into a financial thing. It's like, if I'm coming back, you're going to pay me all sorts of stuff.
Who the fucking knows?
Exactly.
Oh, well, I mean... You know what? I think the people that do shit like that are ballsy. And the thing about it is, being ballsy, you either go down hard, but it's like, okay, that's cool. Or you make out hard. I mean, you succeed. You know what I mean? It's like people saying that fortune follows the brave, you know? It's like only the people with the balls to try something are the ones who are going to get anything done, right?
Right.
And, you got to admire that. Guy's got guts, and he went for it. So if it works for him, great. If it doesn't, then he's probably learned a lesson, I guess.
And guys, back. I apologize for that little interruption there.
Well, these things happen, dude. These computers, they're all so crazy.
Computers. Well, you know, what I was doing, I was as we do here at therighttorock.com, as we discuss topics that kind of come up, we like to give you the best information we can as we're going here. Mm-hmm. And one of the things that I find interesting is, and this one's kind of a gray area type thing, is the situation in Dokken right now.
Uh-huh.
Don't know if George is in, George is out. I do think that they have just released, or they're about to release, a new Greatest Hits record, mm-hmm. where they've redone a bunch of the classics.
Really?
Kind of sounds like somebody else did that a few years back, Holmes on Revolution. Well, George did that, you know. But I'm just kind of interesting. I find it interesting to see where these guys are at. There's all these little hints and rumors that George is coming back, but there's nothing official yet. And that's what I was kind of looking for, just to see, okay, has something happened here that we don't know yet. According to the Dokken website, there's nothing. So it's kind of boring. This looks like there's some tour dates and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
Not sure who they're touring with. I don't know if they're touring with George again. But it looks like they're doing a bunch of festivals here in the next, I guess, the summer.
Mm-hmm.
Something I did find interesting when we talked to Bobby Blotzer is they're getting a bunch of dates on the Rat. I mean, the Scorpions tour.
Oh, yeah?
So, be cool to see Dokken get on board with something like that. And right now, it doesn't look like Dokken's got much going on other than, I mean, it looks like the original lineup, or not the original lineup, the guys who played on the last few records, Barry Sparks, Mick Brown's actually still featured in the group photo on the website here, and then John Levin on guitar, and John Levin's badass.
Mm-hmm.
He's, in my opinion, kind of a George Lynch kind of guy.
That level? You really think he's that level of guitar?
I don't know if he's that level, but his style is so reminiscent of George's.
Oh, okay, I see. So he's a bit of a devotee or something.
Perhaps. Yeah, yeah. So, I tell you what, it's been a while. I don't think we've played anything off this record in a long time. But we could play some. I'll tell you what, I'm going to let you make the decision, Genghis. Do we want to go classic Dokken, or do we want to go with something off the last Dokken record?
Let's go off the last Dokken. I mean, I would obviously prefer classic, but I think that people want to hear newer shit, so I'm willing to go along with that.
Well, the last record they put out came out 3 years ago. God. Lightning Strikes Again. it was kind of, I guess, Don saying, this is my return to classic Dokken. And I don't think they got it all the way. I thought the record was okay, but not the best record.
Sure.
And, I mean, it wasn't horrible, but it was okay. All right, let's play something off that last Dokken record. Lightning Strikes Again. There's a cool track on there called Heart to Stone. It's been a while since I've heard this, but if memory serves, this one rocked. So let's check it out.
That did rock. Nice little opening rhythm.
It was cool, but you know what? How cool would that be if you had Pilsen and Lynch back in the band? The thing is if this Dokken reunion does indeed happen, I don't know if Pilsen's going to be a part of it. I think he's liking that paycheck from Foreigner.
I don't blame him. I mean, you know, like, again, I hate to keep saying it again, we already said it before, but it is business, man.
Right.
You get into it when you're young thinking, you know, all the cool shit that us fans see of the business, mm-hmm. you know, from our perspective, everything looks badass. But we, because so few of us ever really make it to be those people on stage,
right.
we don't really realize there's a lot of shit that goes on. You don't just walk out there and that's it. It's certainly not in the beginning.
Right.
And when you become famous and you're at the top of the heap, sure, then things start to get pretty cushy.
Exactly.
But even then, it's like, okay, it gets cushy for this, but then you start getting pressure from the record company saying, hey, man, can you make us another one of those hit records?
Mm-hmm.
You know, and it's like, because you got three more records on your contract, and it's like, but we were really hoping to go sailing around the world in our underwear or something, you know what I mean? We're enjoying our money. And it's exactly. Like, no, dude, you got a contract, dude. You can enjoy yourselves all you like as long as you get this shit done that we told you, you said you'd get. You signed it. So you know what I'm saying? It's a job whether you want it to be or not once you start getting there. And I think probably the bigger you get, the more cushy you can get, but also the bigger the fall, you know?
Oh, yeah.
So I guess that's, you know, and I'm, you know, it's golden problems, I guess. I mean, if I've got millions, you know, and I got a guy calling me every now and then while I'm in the pool, like, hey, man, are you going to record that new album? I'll just be like, yeah, sure, sure. I think that's why I've heard in the past a lot of people, and I'm not suggesting that every time this happens that that's why, but a lot of people who just wanted to get out of their contracts, a lot of bands, would say, oh, no, we got two albums left. It's like, okay, let's make one of them a live album. I bet they have an option.
Oh, yeah,
so it's
I
like,
think
so we just put another, which to, in me, in my opinion, I always feel like that's a ripoff. I don't like live albums. I think that's
our greatest hits.
I think it's a bullshit reason to give me an album. It's like, you mean I paid for something that I could have listened going to a concert? You know, it's like, you're just doing, it's really like a greatest hits anyway. I mean, all you're doing is playing all these songs off these other albums you already put out.
Right.
It's not like there's new music at a live show.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's all shit I've already heard. Why wouldn't I rather hear the mixed, nice version of those songs instead of the bullshit sound of crowds going off? I just don't get into live stuff. So anyway, but I do like live shows. I like being at a show and going, the experience of being here in front of my favorite band with my friends and drinking myself blind is awesome. Yeah, it's just fun.
Oh, yeah.
So, but you don't get that. I don't feel that when I listen to a CD of a live show. I'm like, I don't get any of that feeling because I'm not there. But anyway, the point is, I think contractually, it's like, well, you just said two albums. You didn't say what kind they had to be. So it's like, greatest hits, live album. Boom, we're out of here. And then we can go get a contract with somebody we like because we're still popular as shit from that last big album.
Right.
That kind of thing. So it's a business, man. So I understand when somebody says, you know what? I got a mortgage. I got kids that got to go to college. I'm going to go with the fucking guaranteed paycheck of the Foreigner tour.
Right.
And I don't feel bad about it at all. I mean, you know, we're having fun. It's not like it's no fun.
Sure. And Jeff's playing with a bunch of his contemporaries. I mean, the oldest dude in the band is like the only original member. He's playing with Kelly Hansen and, it was Jason Bonham, but there's another guy playing drums. And
see, I would think that's not a bad gig if you can get it. Seriously.
Oh, yeah.
If you're a studio musician's actually got it kind of nice. It's like being a consultant. It's like I get to work at all these other cool companies for just a short period, so I don't have to get too stuck on it. But I get to kind of see an experience instead of being stuck in one band for decades.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? It's like I get to do a bunch of different shit.
Yeah, I'm guessing Foreigner's probably just touring during the summer.
Oh, yeah. I mean, because
the
kind of band that they are, they're not really putting out albums.
Right,
they're just, you know, hey, nostalgia is cool, so here we are, Foreigner.
Yeah, for sure. I'll tell you what, it's getting late in the show. Let's go with the classic, man. I've got a good one this week.
All right.
I'm going to go with a band that put out about 2.5 records, if that makes any sense. They did 2 full records, and they did an EP.
Uh-huh.
But I want to pull something off the very first record, and actually the little trivia for Genghis.
Uh-huh.
This guy that played guitar for this band auditioned for Megadeth, but got beat out by Marty Friedman. What is his name? Igor Stravinsky.
I didn't know it was Stump the Drunk.
Stump the Drunk. Yeah, it's gonna be we're gonna steal something from Eddie Trunk. But we have Stump the Drunk with Mary McCheese.
I have no idea.
Jay Reynolds from Malice.
Ah.
So, and I'm trying to think if it was really he replaced or was gonna get Friedman's spot. I can't remember. I think so. I think he was trying out for the gig after Poland left. So
cool.
Malice did 2.5 records. They did an EP, and they were actually in a movie called Vice Versa with Fred Savage and Judd. God, what was it? Judd Hirsch, the guy from Beverly Hills Cop.
Yeah,
Judd Hirsch.
Judge Reinhold. I'm sorry.
Judge Reinhold.
Judge Hirsch is from Taxi.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Judge Reinhold.
Zoned out.
Where it was one of those classic mishaps.
Ooh, wacky mishaps.
Where the father and son changed bodies. So.
Oh, no. One of those movies.
Yeah.
God.
But I tell you what, not to take away from Malice, their first record was called In the Beginning. It came out in 1985, and this is a cool track called Rockin' With You. Let's check it out. Dude, that was cool. That was a little Malice, man. That was awesome. It's been a while.
You like spinning this shit?
I do, man. Well, how about you? You got a pick of the week?
Pick of the week, yeah. How about something off that new Bullet for My Valentine?
Oh, I love Bullet for My Valentine. Those guys fucking rock.
Yeah, they got a new album, and why don't we just play the title track off of it? Fever?
Let's do it.
Still doing that thing, you know?
You know, they're a band. It seems like, not that, and I'm not knocking them here, but they're one of those bands that kind of have that sound where it doesn't differentiate too much from record to record to record. This is their third or fourth record.
Hey, AC/DC turned that into a dynasty,
oh,
dude.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't think there's any crime in that. What it is simply this. I'm going to do this over here. This is me. And anybody who wants to listen, come on over.
Mm-hmm.
That's really all you're doing. And it just so happens that when they come on over, you know, you make money and you get to have a living. If they're able to get people to keep coming on over to the same album, even if they record the same freaking album over and over again, more power to them.
Yeah, do it to it. Yeah.
And if people stop coming to buy them, then they'll be like, oh, let's try something else, and that's fine. Mm-hmm. There's bands like that. It doesn't mean they suck.
No,
it's just a certain kind of mentality, and I don't have a problem with it.
I don't either. I think...
I just gravitate to whatever sounds good. I don't
even
care.
That's all I'm saying. Well, to get to my pick of the week real quick, I was going to pick something off the new Seven Dust record called Cold Day Memory. Not a bad record. It's the first one show the lineup back together. John Lowry back with the band. So, it's not a bad record. It's just... it hadn't kicked my ass yet. So...
You think it might grow on?
And I screwed up with John Conley.
John Conley.
I'm hoping it will. That's something that's interesting about me is it's got to kind of grab me. If I'm reviewing it for the site, I listen to the crap out of it until I get a total feel for the record. But some of the stuff that I don't end up reviewing for the site, it better grab me pretty quick or... It gets lost in the shuffle, kind of. So.
Fair enough. Yeah, that's why you got the deck, right? I mean, you've always got a new round of stuff you're listening to. It's not like you're ever going, I got nothing to listen to. What am I going to listen to today?
Oh,
I have no idea.
Well, yeah, the new deck coming up here shortly, I'm going to be reviewing some stuff talking about some stuff that I haven't reviewed on the site. There's some newer releases out there. Just give me my two cents. I hope you guys are digging this show. We've only got the one up, maybe two by now, but... hope you guys are digging it. It's a work in progress, so I'll keep on rolling with that. But tell you what, off the new Seven Dust, this is called Confessions Without Faith.
I'll dream that kept me young and trusted, singled out and dazed. What else?
Could end up loving this record, but I'm not there yet.
Maybe for all we know, it might take them a little while to get back to their former, sort of speed. It's like we got to get back together.
I think that maybe it's the production. I don't think it's as crunchy. I wish it was a little bit heavier sounding record.
I can say based on that track we just heard, I can see that.
Yeah. So, yeah, I think if the production would have been a little more punchy, it might have maybe a little bit more in your face is what I was kind of hoping for. Anyway, guys, we want to thank you for listening, as usual. We've made it through over 100 episodes, and we're going to keep on rolling until we get to 200, and then we're going to reevaluate
Peter out
everything.
Like crazy.
So anyway, we want to give you two big, fat
holes up.
This is Richard Christie from Charred Walls of the Damned, and you are listening to the Genghis and Ragman Show. Horns up.
Somewhere pissing on himself because he's so drunk. But this time we've got a basher, a guy that beats the shit out of the drums and gives you double bass drum in your face. His name is Richard Christie from Charred Walls of the Dam. Give it up.
What's up, guys? How you doing? I'm actually I'm sitting on the side of a gutter. I'm sitting on Genghis right now. We had a few beers together, and he couldn't hold up. He couldn't stay with me.
Well, I just make sure he doesn't piss in his pants because it gets a little embarrassing.
It's too late for that. I think from the smell of it, he did a number two, I think, too. So.
Yeah, well, it's not shocking. He's passed out in the Right to Rock Studios more times than I can try to remember here. It's embarrassing.
I'll change the diaper after we're done with the interview.
Awesome. Well, Richard, welcome back. It's been a little while since you put anything out. I guess the last thing you did was it probably with Iced Earth, wasn't it?
Yeah, the Glorious Burden album back in 2004, yeah.
Yeah, that was a cool record, and I'm guessing that's how you met Ripper Owens. Tell us a little bit of how the whole Charred Walls of the Damned project came together, and then how you got all the guys together to be in it.
All right, well, it basically kind of started about 10 years ago, Charred Walls of the Damned, with Jason Sukoff and I. I've known Jason since 1999, and we became really good friends soon after we met, and I knew he was a really, really talented guitar player and a great songwriter, and we just ended up hanging out together a lot on the weekends when I lived in Florida, and neither of us had much of a social life. We weren't great at, neither of us are lookers, so we weren't out trolling for chicks all the time, so we pretty much just stayed home and hung out at his house and just wrote music on the weekends. And even when he built Audio Hammer Studios at his house in the year 2000, I helped with the construction of that, and especially after he built his studio, we would just hang out at his studio every weekend and jam and record and write songs together. So Jason and I have been writing songs together for 10 years now, almost 10 years now, and we always knew that if I ever kind of put my own band together, that I would definitely want Jason to be involved, and we had always talked about doing a band together, and I still have demos from about 8 or 9 years ago of full songs that we had written together that are really good, and so when I decided that I really wanted to get back into the swing of things and get back into recording and doing a little bit of touring again, once I got that itch about 2 years ago, the first person I called was Jason, because I knew that I would want Jason to be involved in the songwriting and also the recording of the band. And so that's kind of how it all started, is just with me giving Jason a ring, and then I just kind of naturally thought of who I would love to have as a singer and who I would love to have as a bass player. And I met Tim Owens when I was on tour with Iced Earth, and when we did the Glorious Burden album with Iced Earth back in 2003-2004, and Tim and I became really good friends, and I've been a fan of his voice and his singing since I heard him with Judas Priest in the 90s, and Steve DiGiorgio I've known since 1997 when he played on some of the Death demos for the Sound of Perseverance album, and I've been a big fan of Steve since back in his Sadist days, and since I first heard Individual Thought Patterns by Death, which I think still has some of the most amazing bass playing of all time of any metal album. And so it was just kind of a simple thing where I immediately thought of all those guys and gave them a call and asked them, hey, would you like to be in this new band I'm putting together? And they all said yes. So luckily it all came together fairly easily.
It's awesome because you do kind of have a little bit of a super group. You know, you've got Steve that's been around forever, yourself, you've played in several bands, Rippers, you know, from Priest and everything he's done, and then Jason, I guess his name's bigger, I guess, on the production end because he's produced a lot of big bands like All That Remains and stuff like that.
Yeah.
So I guess supergroup, I don't know if that's a loose term here, but you guys kind of are. I mean, you got a lot of talent in that band.
Oh, well, thank you, and that really is a compliment, and I appreciate when people say that. But I also want the focus to be on, you know, just the songs and not who it is that's playing them. One of the things when I put this band together was I just wanted us to have really catchy and really heavy songs, and I think I wanted to make an album that when people heard it, they were judging the songs just on how good the songs were, not really who it was playing the songs. I like the focus to be that the music is really, really good, and you know, you can't really ride off of a name and of people knowing who you are if the songs aren't good. So the main focus for me was the songs, and just that they were played really well and written really well, and the fact that people are excited by the people that are in the band, then that's cool too. But we definitely didn't want to kind of rest on, I guess you could say, rest on our laurels and what we've done before. We just wanted to make a really amazing heavy metal album that when people hear the name Charred Walls of the Damned, they just think, wow, that's a band that writes some really cool songs, and not really think of all the individual names in that band.
Sure. Yeah, I got to tell you, you know, I'm one of the guys. I'm a huge metal guy. And, you know, I saw the band name Charred Walls of the Damned. I'm like, who the hell are these guys, you know? And then I saw Ripper Owens' name. I was like, okay, well, Ripper's in, I ought to check it out. And I got to say, you know, Ripper's been doing it for a while, but I think the music on this record suits his voice better than any other project the guy's done. I think the songs are written so well. I mean, he did some cool stuff with Iced Earth, and I liked the stuff he did with Priest. But I think, as a whole, if you look at this album as a whole and compare it to anything else he's done, I think the songwriting and everything fit his vocal style better than anything else he's done, because he's not in that Priest mold. He's not in, you know, an Iced Earth mold. He's in this total new band with a bunch of great songs, like you said. And that's a cool thing about this band,
well,
is there's so
you.
Much aggression, and there's all this awesome melody, too.
Thank you very much. Yeah, I mean, when I was writing this music, before I kind of put the band together, I was thinking, wow, I would love to, you know, because I was in some death metal bands, and there's some blast beats on this album and some death metal influence stuff, and I was thinking when I was writing, I was like, wow, it'd be cool to have, you know, some death metal type music, but with really melodic yet heavy singing, and Tim was the perfect person for that, and I was really excited to hear him sing. I'd never heard him sing over something that had blast beats before, and I thought it'd be really fun to do something like that, and I think it turned out really cool, and Tim has such an amazing range that it's exciting to kind of try different things with him and in the studio, and he has such great ideas for vocal harmonies and for vocal parts, and even for the next album that I've already pretty much already written, I have a lot of cool ideas, and I actually went to see Tim sing with his band Hail, which is kind of a super group cover band that he does with Dave Ellison and Mike Portnoy was on drums, and Andreas from Sepultura was on guitar, and they did a bunch of killer cover tunes, and they did a Sepultura song, and Tim sang in this kind of style I'd never heard him sing in before, which was pretty close to Max Cavalera's singing style, just real guttural and low, and I thought it sounded really cool, so I want to definitely try some stuff like that on the next album with him, and that's what is so amazing about Tim, is he has just such a great range and just an amazing voice, and he can sing in kind of several different styles, and I love that, because I love to have that variety in our music, and yeah, I'm super psyched about his performance on the album, and he did it in such a short time. We did all the vocals in I think like 5 days, and we had kind of a between my I had a limited time because I had to do it during my vacation at work, and also Tim was kind of between going on tour and things like that, so we had a short amount of time to record this album, and Tim just came in and did incredibly and sang the whole album in about 5 days, so it was amazing.
That's awesome. Well, you know, something interesting, like you said here, Tim with the blast beat drums, and I guess the first track on the record, Ghost Town, kind of starts off with that blast beat sound, and then it kind of gets into more of a melodic type thing, which is cool. And like you said, it really fits very well there. I think the track I'm really digging now the most is probably Voices Within the Walls. I really dig that track with the kind of real melodic intro and stuff, and then it gets heavy and just really killer stuff, man.
Yeah, that's actually my favorite. It's hard for me to pick a favorite song because it's always changing because I love all the songs because I'm really attached to them. But if I had to pick a favorite, it would probably be that one. And that was one of the first ones I wrote for the album. And I remember when we were in the studio, Jason is the one that came up with the idea for the chorus. I had a little bit different idea for the chorus, and then Jason started singing the idea that we used on the album, and when I heard it, I was like, wow, that is really cool. So I think the chorus in that song is really catchy, and Jason did an amazing job with coming up with that vocal line, the melody, and I get chills when I practice to that song, and I can't wait to play it live.
Oh man, I can't wait to hear it live. I hope you guys, I don't know if I told you this, but we're in Texas, so I know I saw on your site that your guys are going to be opening up for Dream Theater. That's got to be, you got to be freaking out over that. That's going to be an awesome show.
Oh,
man.
Absolutely. Yeah, I've been a huge Dream Theater fan since the early 90s, and Mike Portnoy is a huge influence on my drumming, so to share the stage with Mike and the other Dream Theater guys is going to be an honor. I really, really cannot wait. It's going to be awesome, and You know, I've played at the Palladium in Worcester before. It's one of my favorite venues, so I'm really psyched. And we're getting ready to announce a tour. It's just a little mini tour, and, you know, it's in the kind of upper Midwest and Northeast area. But we're hoping, you know, we want to do Texas. We want to do the West Coast. We want to do Florida. And so we're hoping, hopefully, by the end of the year that we'll be able to come, you know, do the rest of the country as well.
Well, let me ask you this, because there are so many, you know, cool people and, you know, Ripper's doing, I know he just put out a solo record, and now he's doing Charred Walls with you, and he's got Hail. Is this band intact? Is this a real band that's going to continue on? Or was it, it doesn't sound like it's a one-off. It sounds like you guys are already planning for a second one.
Oh, definitely, yeah. This is something I want to keep going for a long time, you know. I understand all the other guys are busy, and I'm busy as well with my day job, and the other guys have bands and jobs, and Jason's real busy as a producer, and so I understand that, you know, there's going to be times where maybe one person can't go on tour or do something like that, but that's fine. You know, we'll do what we can when we can, and we'll make it work. But definitely, you know, we'll have all four guys for the next album, and the next album's pretty much written. I've written 10 songs for the next album, and I'm going to keep writing some more up until we record. But the songs are sounding amazing. I'm really, really excited, and right now I'm kind of working on lyrics also for the next album. So I'm hoping to go in the studio and start tracking the drums by the end of the year for the next album. So yeah,
awesome.
I want this to be a long-term thing for sure, because I'm really proud of how the first album turned out, and I think it's just the beginning, and it's going to lead to even better things, and I'm really psyched about this band, and I see no reason why stop at one album when we're having so much fun, and the album turned out so great. I can't wait to do it again.
Well, let me ask you this, because you're a drummer, and you know, you don't typically hear about the drummer being the main songwriter. Are you? It sounds like you're the main guy songwriting. I guess you and Jason are the main guys. How do you play guitar? Do you play other instruments to help you write these songs, or how's that work?
Yeah, I've played guitar since '92, and you know, for a long time, I played guitar very little because I would spend 3 or 4 hours a day playing the drums, and since I moved to New York, I still play the drums every day. I play for an hour a day, but I also, at night, I play guitar for a couple hours a night, and I love writing music, and the way it works is I'll write all the songs, I'll play the guitar, bass, drums, and also sing vocal ideas on the songs, on the demos, and I'll pretty much have the complete album with me playing everything on it, and then I'll take that to Jason when we go in the studio, and we'll do about 2 or 3 days of pre-production before we start recording the album, and Jason will go through and listen to the songs and really make them tighter and take out parts that he doesn't think need to be there, and just kind of tighten everything up and make some suggestions. So it's real great to have Jason's input. Even though the whole album's already written, it takes on a new form once Jason gets a hold of the songs, and also Jason is amazing at coming up with vocal melodies for the songs. So I leave a lot, even though I pretty much sing the whole album, I know that Jason is better at that than I am, so he comes up with a lot of the vocal melodies that end up on the finished album. So Jason definitely has a big part, and Steve and Tim, I also tell them, you know, any suggestions you have for the songs, any ideas, I want to hear them, and we'll use them. And so it definitely is a collaboration, but just because we're all we live in different parts of the country, it seems to work best that I write all the music, and once we get into the studio, that's when we kind of all collaborate on everything.
Oh, that's cool, because it sounds like it's really kind of a group effort there, and I think a lot of guys probably don't know that. They probably see all these names and said, this is the one off, but this is exciting to hear that you guys are going to move forward with this, and hopefully, you know, we're going to get a lot more great music from you guys here in the future
definitely,
as well.
Definitely, and Metal Blade, our label, has been amazing. They've been really supportive of this band, and I'm really, really excited at what they've done for this band and for this album, and I definitely want to keep working with them, you know, for as long as we're around. I love the label, and I love the band, and the fan response has been amazing, and it's really inspiring, and that's why fairly quickly I pretty much wrote almost the whole next album, because it's just, I was so inspired by the whole recording process of the first album and by the fans' emails and comments on the album, and all the reviews have been really positive. So whenever I read a positive review or see an email from a fan that loves the album, it really makes me so happy and inspires me and makes me want to come right home and write more music. So I'm definitely excited to keep this going for a long time.
Well, that's awesome, dude. Well, you know, something else I wanted to talk to you about is, let's go back to the record here for a second. There are a couple tracks on the record that seem like they tie together, especially like Blood on Wood and then In a World So Cruel. Am I getting the right vibe there? Because it seems like there's this underlying, almost in the chorus, or one, maybe right before the chorus, one of the verses has that same kind of flow. Is that, were those songs supposed to be connected together like that?
No, I guess that kind of happened by chance. No, they were never really intended to kind of, you know, flow together or kind of have the same theme or anything like that. I guess it just kind of happened by chance.
Do you hear what I'm talking about, or am I just totally out in left field?
No, well, I actually haven't heard that before, but you know, I can definitely see where you're coming from. You know, they do. Maybe they have a similar kind of sound to them, and I can see where the choruses are a little bit similar. But it's funny you mention that, because on the next album, there's two songs that I wrote that kind of flow together, and they're tied together with an acoustic piece in the middle.
Oh, nice!
And that's the first time I've written something like that. And even though they're two separate songs, I kind of see them as one, like 11-minute song. But so I'm definitely thinking along that lines for the next album. But no, for this one, I think it would just kind of happen by chance. I mean, maybe those two. I'm kind of thinking that I maybe wrote those two back to back. So maybe just by chance, I was kind of in the same vibe when I was writing those.
Oh, okay.
So well, yeah, that definitely, you know, it's just a chance thing, I would think. But that's cool that you mentioned that, and I'll definitely, now that you mention it, I'll be listening more for that.
Well, you know, it's interesting, because I was listening to the CD before we started chatting, and I listened to it. I was like, man, the songs, there's got to be some sort of tie-in. He hung out with John Schaefer for a while, who's into all these stories and concept records. Maybe there's some concept behind these two songs, but apparently not. So that's cool. I'm glad I picked up on that. And
Now that you mention it, it is funny you mention that, because they kind of, the lyrics kind of do go together. Now, wow, that's funny that you say that, because I never even thought about it, but Blood on Wood is about my love for drumming. A lot of my lyrics are pretty positive, just because that's kind of how I am. I'm a pretty positive person, and when I sat down to write lyrics, I just wanted to write about things that inspire me, and I found it easier to write about things that I love. And so I wrote Blood on Wood one day after I was rehearsing drums, and I looked down, and my drumsticks were covered in blood, and
oh, wow.
I realized I popped a blood blister on my finger practicing drums. I was thinking, wow, that's pretty cool that I love drumming so much that I'm willing to bleed for it. So that's what those lyrics are about. And then In a World So Cruel is about, it's kind of inspired by me living in a storage unit for 8 years and just, you know, wondering, wow, is it worth it to do this, to have this life where I'm living in a little metal building and just pounding away at the drums every day. But then when I look back on it, it was definitely worth it. But there were times where, you know, it'd be the middle of summer, and I'm sitting in this warehouse sweating while I'm, you know, playing drums, and I can barely stand the heat, and I was kind of second guessing myself, but then now that I look back, it was totally worth it, and it takes a lot of hard work to get anything that you love, and so really, I guess, yeah, both songs, the lyrics do kind of tie together with the fact that they're both about just really working hard for something that you love, and looking back and being proud of the hard work and the ambition that you've had.
Well, another thing too that's interesting about your career is you were in one of the, I guess, one of the founding bands of the Death movement. You were in Death with Chuck Schindler, rest in peace, and then you were with, I guess, his next project after that, I guess the last one he did really, Control Denied, which Genghis and I are huge fans of.
Oh, that's cool. Actually, they're getting ready to reissue the Control Denied album through Relapse Records.
Oh, awesome. Awesome.
Yeah, with a bunch of bonus stuff, and we're going to be finishing up the second Control Denied album, hopefully by next year.
Oh, there's tracks with Chuck on them?
Yeah, there's tracks where the drums are finished and Chuck's parts are finished, and we just have to go back and finish everything else. And there were some legal issues with the label that as Chuck had signed to years ago, and luckily that's all been cleared up, and so we're ready to go, and myself and the other guys in Control Denied and the Schildiener family, we're all really excited to finish up the second album.
Oh, that's all. I'm sorry I butchered his last name.
Oh, that's okay. That's all right.
But what a great thing, man, because that Control Denied record, I think it slipped under the radar from when it came out. So getting a release now, hopefully it's going to open up to a new audience, because there was so much great music on that record, man.
I agree. I remember rehearsing for that album and thinking, wow, this is like just, it was perfect, because I love... You know, I love Chuck's music, I've been a huge Death fan since the late 1980s, and I also love melodic singing, and I loved Tim Amar's voice, and I just thought it was a perfect blend of Chuck's, you know, music and Tim's voice, and I know Chuck was really, really proud of it, and yeah, I really hope that some people will discover it, and also other fans will rediscover it through the re-release on Relapse.
That's awesome. Well, just to take you back a little bit further, or not further than that, but how did you get involved with Iced Earth for a couple records?
Well, that was through a good friend of mine named Andrew Sample, who worked at Century Media, who Iced Earth was signed to, and he's a fellow Kansan, and I've known him from back when I lived in the Midwest, and he suggested me to John Schaefer when they were looking for a drummer, and Jim Morris from Morris Sound Recording also suggested me to John, and so after John had heard suggestions from both these guys that he should give me a try, I flew to Indiana and auditioned for the band, and I remember the first song that we played together, it was just me and John in John's basement, and we played the song Violate, which is really, really fast double bass, and John just looked over and he was like, had a big smile on his face, and I did too, and it just felt great, and you know, after we jammed that day, he was like, man, yeah, I'd love to have you in the band. So I was a huge Iced Earth fan as well before I was in the band, so I've been very fortunate that, you know, with Death and Iced Earth both, I was a huge fan long before I was in each of those bands, so being able to be a fan and then join the band is really one of the most exciting things that's ever happened to me.
That's awesome. What led you to leave after the Glorious Burden?
Well, unfortunately, fortunately, but also unfortunately, I had the opportunity to audition for a job at the Howard Stern Show, which to me was a dream come true. I've been a huge fan of Howard Stern since the mid-90s, and I listened to his radio show religiously when I lived in Florida, and when I was an electrician at my day job, I would wake up at 6 a.m. when Howard's show would start and listen for the whole show on my headphones while I was at work, and
I started sending him material in the late 90s, and Howard started playing it on the air. And then I, in 2004, I had the opportunity to audition for a job with Howard after Stuttering John left, and his position came open. And but unfortunately, the time for the audition conflicted with a time that Iced Earth would have been on tour.
Oh.
And so I had to make a decision. It was really one of the hardest decisions I've ever had to make. On one end, I would have had to quit Iced Earth, and then I didn't even know if I was going to have the job with Howard or not. So I could have been out of a band and out of, you know, not had a job. And but then on the other hand, if I didn't audition for the job with Howard, I knew I would regret it for the rest of my life, and I would always wonder what if I would have auditioned. And I just, it came down to the fact that I had to audition. I knew that I didn't want to live with that guilt for the rest of my life of not knowing what would have happened if I'd auditioned. So I had to at least give it a shot, and unfortunately I had to leave Iced Earth. But luckily I'm really good friends with one of the most amazing drummers in the world, Bobby Jerzombek, who plays with Halford and also played with the band Riot. And he was able to step in, and I even went to the rehearsals when he was rehearsing with them and showed him some of the drum parts, and just kind of made sure it was a smooth transition. And luckily he was able to step in and kind of make the transition a little easier after I left. So everything worked out great, but it was an unfortunate thing that I had to leave Iced Earth, but a fortunate thing that I now have my dream job.
That's awesome, man. I got to tell you, your radio calls are just so freaking funny, too.
Oh, yeah. Thank you very much. That's something that that me and my friends and I used to do back when I was young. When I back when I lived in Kansas, there was a radio show, and we used to mess around and call them and prank them, and I never knew it would lead to a career one day.
The one you did the other day where I think your grandson had pumped off on the, some sort of piece of furniture. I was rolling, man.
Out. Yeah, I said he was spraying because he just learned how to pump off.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah, we call that one our jizz stains prank call. That's that was the reoccurring theme, that everything we called up to sell on Tradio was covered in jizz stains.
Or fecal, there's some fecal matter on my wiffle bat.
Jizz stains and fecal matter, yeah.
Exactly. Well, that's awesome, man, because I saw, too, on your page that you do a little comedy, too, so I guess... Were you doing comedy when you were in Iced Earth, or did this all come after you left the band and went to the Stern Show?
Well, I did. You know, I wrote comedy songs and sent in material to Howard while I was in Iced Earth, and but I didn't try stand-up comedy until 2005 after I joined Howard's show, and Sal the Stockbroker pretty much inspired me to give it a try, and I really liked it. And, you know, it's a thing that you can do stand-up comedy for 20 years and still be learning at it. It's a constant learning process, and, you know, I'm definitely still learning, but luckily I'm fortunate enough to be able to go out and do shows, and I've done comedy tours with some of the other guys on the Stern Show, and yeah, I love it. I've been taking a little break from it since I've been doing Charred Walls of the Damned, and I'll probably eventually go back to it, but it gives you that same rush when you get up on stage and you make people laugh, the same rush that you get from playing music that you love. So I really love it. It's definitely it's an adrenaline rush, and it's something that it gets me very nervous to go up there on stage, but once I'm up there and once I'm done, it feels great.
Well, you know, I'd assume being back behind the drums, you know, you're a focal point, but when you're not behind those drums and you're on stage and you're, you know, it's this Richard Christie, it's got to be a little bit of like, oh, shit, what do I have down there?
Yeah, when it's just you and a microphone and people are staring up at you, it's terrifying. And I have so much respect for anybody that has the balls to get up and do that. And it really is... it's a lot different than being up there behind the drums, you know. Like, I still get nervous playing the drums, but at least if I drop a stick, hopefully the guitar or the bass or the vocals will cover it up a little bit, but if I forget something when I'm doing stand-up, there's nothing there to cover me.
I hear you. Well, you know, just taking you back when you joined the Stern Show, and you I guess you kind of left the music scene for a while. Did you just get the itch to do this, or had this been kind of brewing in you for a little while to say, man, I got to get something out, I got to start playing again, and is that what kind of overcame you, or did...
Well, it's been something that, you know, I always knew that I would eventually get back into doing music, and it's something I never really stopped doing. I always continue to practice drums every day and play guitar every day. But I wanted to just kind of take my time and make sure the time was right and make sure that I had a set of really good songs for an album and make sure that it wasn't something that I rushed right into. I've had a lot of offers to join other bands, and I really wanted to just wait and kind of do my own thing and to be able to decide when we were going to tour and record, because I could work it around my schedule at work. And it just seemed like the time finally felt right, that I felt comfortable enough in my songwriting and my guitar playing that I had a set of songs that I really liked, that I knew we could go into the studio and record these songs and they'd be really good. And it was just kind of a matter of being patient and waiting until I had written a full album that I knew was very, very strong.
Oh, and that you did, my friend. That you
did.
Thank you. Great record. And we want to tell all the fans out there to go get the brand new release from Charred Walls of the Damned. It fucking rocks on Metal Blade Records. And Richard, we want to thank you for coming on the RightToRock.com and the Genghis and Ragman Show. Do you have anything you'd like to tell the fans before we let you go today?
Well, I look forward to seeing all the fans out on the road. We're going to have a big tour announcement, hopefully by the end of this week or next week. So I'm really, really excited about that and getting out on stage and playing these songs. And for all of the Charred Walls of the Damned info, you can go to richardchristie.com or charredwallsofthedamned.com. And thank you so much to all the fans that have said nice things about the album and written me nice emails, and I really appreciate it. You know, metal fans are the greatest fans in the world, and it's like a family. Being a metalhead, you know, it's like you have a huge family all around the world, and so I'm just really excited at the response for this album, and I'd like to thank everybody for that.
Well, Richard, I think you hit the nail on the head, and a lot of people don't get it, but metal is like family. You know, you could be at a metal show, look at your brother next to you, headbang with him, you don't know him from Adam, but he's your brother in metal for that moment, you know.
Yeah, you might not even speak the same language as that person, but, you know, you still have that bond, you have that metal bond, and metal is a universal language. It doesn't matter where you live or what language you speak or who you are, metal speaks to everybody.
Exactly. That's so funny because you mentioned that you don't even speak. I've had a few experiences where I've been at concerts overseas. My wife and I just went to Germany here not too long ago. We saw Rage. I don't know if you're familiar with that.
I love Rage. I've been a huge Rage fan since Perfect Man came out in, I think, 1987. And I remember I bought the cassette for Perfect Man. I saw the video for Don't Fear the Winter. On there used to be a Canadian music channel called Much Music, and they had a thing called the Power Hour, and I saw the video for Don't Fear the Winter, and I was blown away. I thought it was such an awesome song, and I've been a huge Rage fan ever since. And that was one of the bands that I never thought I'd get to see live, and then at the Bang Your Head Festival in 2000, I got to see them live. I was over there touring with the band Demons and Wizards, and and I couldn't believe I was getting to see Rage live. It was really awesome. And Peavy is awesome. He's a really, really cool guy and definitely a metal legend.
Dude, if you haven't checked out their new record, Strings to a Web, you got to.
I absolutely have checked it out, and I love it. It's incredible.
I think it's one of their best records, and it's amazing since they're so far into their career, too, you know?
Yeah, a lot of people don't realize they've been around since like 84. They used to be called Avenger, right?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, and once Perfect Man came out, I became a huge fan. I remember I bought their back catalog. They were on Noise Records, and I pretty much have all their cassettes, and then I started buying their CDs once I kind of moved up to CDs, and it's great to see that they're still putting albums out, and the albums they put out are still awesome.
Totally. And yours is too, brother. And we want, again, thank you for coming on, dude. It was really cool to talk to you. Good luck with the tour and with everything, man. We hope to again to talk to you in the future.
Well, thank you so much, and I really, really appreciate you having me on your show, and it's really an honor to talk to you, and it's always great to talk metal.
To our boys in Sonic X, Adam and Joseph have lent us 13 to finish the show. So what you're listening to right now is 13 by Sonic X. So check them out and keep checking us out. And horns up.